This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, voicemail lady. Okay, Michael, we're on the Jason
Task Force. Okay, we're being recorded.
September 11th.
September 11th, 2017. The meeting attendees are Jeff Elliott, Michael Sessa, Alex Jackal, James Whetstone, Steve Marginal, and Sam Allen. And also, I got emails from May and Susan saying they could not attend today because of other commitments. So that's the roll call. Two topics today, and Alex is on, and I thought if he came on, we could let him speak a little more about where A4L is going. I think we passed out, Alex, the paper that you sent from A4L. And I don't know who had a chance to read it. They kept adding more and more to the JSON as they moved on, and they created some new semantic structures that were proprietary, but allowed them to map their XML better to JSON. So do you have any comments or anything, Alex, that you want to talk about on that particular document and what you thought of it? You can also express your opinion. I know you
not much. Here's the thing. I for the most part have been seeding that conversation to people who know better than I do, right, on that particular thing. I do think that the way SIF did it, the way A4L did it, is not perfect in any way. I think it was a very pragmatic, one thing, though, that I think is useful about it is, although they did use some structures that sort of veered off I guess you could call it, I don't know if I'd call it proprietary in the sense that anyone can use it. It's open, right? But they veered off the standard way of doing it because of their commitment to being able to represent sort of as much as possible a two-way path, right, which is very difficult to do, right? And so I think some of those compromises might be necessary. And if we follow a very pure path, we may not be able to do that. And so I guess that's the only real comment I have about it. And if we wanted to dive into the much more technically into it, I would want to drag someone else from A4L onto the call, right, to do that. At the risk of saying stupid stuff that I really don't know enough about. I'll stop.
Yeah, I think I sent a copy of the paper again. I don't know if anybody had a chance to look at it. But we probably should plan on for next week people reading that document and going through it, because obviously this is one organization we'd like to align with if possible. So I think it's important that we look at this and go forward.
Do you want me to invite John, the CTO for A4L, and Mike Reynolds, who's the head of the infrastructure group? Do you want me to invite them to come to our next
meeting? Yeah, that would be fantastic. They can talk about their approach and what. Now, from this paper, it sounds like they hadn't implemented it yet. They were just, this was a discussion, a paper for discussion within the organization.
The problem is that's a documentation problem, not a implement. They've already implemented and they're deep into implementation. As a matter of fact, they probably can give you some good insight as to what happened. We've got tons of implementations now that are passing the SIF XML schemas executed as JSON objects across the wire. So we should probably, they could probably tell you what some of the, you know, I'm sure there were problems but it just never, it never fed back into the documentation, as we know often happens, right? So let me invite them to come to next week's meeting and let them talk about it, and they can probably answer those kinds of questions much better than I can. Or maybe they'll say, yeah, we did it, and, you know, that's sort of what it was, right? I have no idea what they're going to say, but I'll invite them.
Okay, that'd be great. That would be fantastic. And so we can delve into that. Because that's what we're looking at now. People have actually done this. We haven't done it yet. And other people have done it. And unfortunately, they haven't all done it the same way. So we'll have to deal with that. Okay, the other thing that I talked about, what I said in the minutes that we would be talking about this week, is OpenHR and their approach. And I'm not an expert. I just read it before the meeting a few minutes ago. But their approach is, from a certain date forward, they are developing all of their schemas in JSON schema language. And then translating that, automatically, I wasn't clear, but they're translating, they do their work groups do all their work in JSON and JSON schema. And then they take the JSON schema and translate it to an XML schema. It's a very different approach than anybody else has taken. So I wanted to just describe that basic approach, and since we announced a partnership, right, Michael? I'm not sure what that entails, but with OpenHR, what does that entail?
Well, primarily, the partnership, A, is a partnership, so it makes people feel more comfortable to have these types of relationships and these types of conversations, but also to align with them. But then the bigger part is, we are members, what we call them, partners. So we're a member of HR Open Standards, but a partner. And they're a member/partner with PESC. And we give them free registrations to the summit, and they give me free registrations to their annual events, so that we're baking in socialization. Anything else above that, Michael, is just anything we can, work out of it. I say it was specifically vague.
Okay, yeah.
But one thing I wanted to ask, Michael, was you mentioned that they were developing JSON and then from that creating XML.
Creating an XML schema, yeah.
XML schema. Do they say anything what they're doing with their existing XML schema? So right now they have XML schema, and what they've done is produce pure JSON, right?
They're using the JSON XML schema, the JSON schema language, to describe their standards.
So, but at the end of the day, are they going to have another XML schema from the JSON?
Yes, they'll have an XML schema. They actually have a set of rules and describing the things that won't transfer perfectly through their automation, but they will be still producing XML schemas from their JSON schemas.
And is that, I guess my question is it backward compatible? So if they're going to be producing XML schema, is it backward compatible to the schema they have been producing for the past 20 years?
I can't answer that directly, but from what I read, what they tried to do was, if there was a constraint in XML, that constraint during the translation may disappear if there was a difficulty in doing a translation. So their bias seems to be if it'll be backward compatible, because there are certain constraints that used to be there won't be there anymore, because we can't do that in JSON schema and then translate it. So that's the impression I got from reading their documentation. So what that means is they probably will be backward compatible, but it won't catch some things that it caught before in terms of constraints. so that would still be backward compatible, but I would think. So that's what I read. So I open it up. I mean, that would be a huge change for us. It means we would have to start looking at our basic standards, writing JSON schema, and that probably would take quite a while. But anybody like that idea or see it? I mean, with all the volunteers we have, I just don't know how we could vote anybody to do that. Do they have a full-time staff, Michael? I mean, besides, like, we have two people.
No, they don't. In fact, the person that I gave you an email from, Chris Pauly,
mm-hmm.
the guy had sent you all an email from him about 2 weeks ago on Jason LD. He is their primary tech person, and what I found out is he's actually a consultant. He represents HR Open Standards a lot, talks a lot about them, but he's a consultant. Not a big deal, but he's not an employee, I guess is what I'm getting at.
But the problem we would have with something like that is you need some full-time people to go through and create those schemas, right?
Well, I'm not sure he's full-time or part-time, but he's paid.
Yeah.
He's paid by HR Open Standards, so.
Maybe somebody can convince me, but I just don't see any feasible way that we could go that direction with the bandwidth.
I concur, Michael. I think that's not a reasonable path for us. I think it might be interesting to see what kind of transformations they're doing and how they're doing it, but I don't think it's very comparable. It would require a massive state change and a massive flow of resources, and frankly, it's not clear to me that it would be worth that. Right? I don't think there's any value add to the massive amount of cost it would take. So I'm in alignment with you on that, Michael. I don't think we should use them as a model for how we should do it. I think we might just learn something from them, I believe. I think that's quite possible. But that's not a model that I think would work for PEC.
Yeah. I mean, the other model is the reverse of that. We have XML schemas. We could, and we've talked about other alternatives, is using programming language reference models and things like that. But and using transformations that are available within open source code. But, I mean, we went, the tab went pretty far in doing a conversion from XML schemas to JSON schemas. So that's another possibility going the other direction, so people would have a schema language to validate their JSON against. But I agree with you, Alex. I can't see how we just don't have enough resources to do something like that. Even if we wanted to do it, then I'm not even sure it even makes sense. Because XML is more expressive and has more subtlety than JSON, and therefore, you know, and that's what they pointed out. You lose some stuff when you go from JSON schema to XML schema. Anybody else have an opinion on that, or it's a dead?
Michael, is there anything else to glean from HR Open Standards as far as how they modeled the JSON, or is that pretty?
Well, what they did is they actually modeled the. They have certain rules that they cover for creating the JSON schema. So, for example, let's say we decided that we wanted to supply JSON schema, but we want to do it automatically from XML. We could look at their rules for creating a JSON schema and see if we're consistent with that as our target for a JSON schema. So they had some stuff, and I didn't understand it. Maybe somebody here that knows JSON better than I do, or JSON schema better than I do, they kept talking about this localization tag, and I don't know what that's all about. So it has something to do with language, I think.
Yeah, I don't know either. This is James. I haven't really dug into those standards much, to be honest with you. I ought to start looking at those. And, you know, I kind of looked through the document you sent out, the one, was it OpenAPI? Is that the one?
The one I sent out was from A4L, the document I sent out this week. I sent that out before, but I just sent it out for
that week. That's for the SIF standard.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
That's a different one, yeah. So I guess we'll send out a reading assignment for this week, which and if Alex can find some people to talk about what SIF is doing. Now they're not. Did they? I'm trying to think on this article. Design the JSON format. But are they, I'm trying to remember, are they doing, they're talking about the JSON itself, but I don't think they're talking about JSON schema. They haven't adopted JSON schema language?
No, they have not adopted JSON schema language. But what they're doing is they're using XML schemas for all their validation. They're doing instance translation of XML to JSON. And JSON to XML,
okay,
and then,
so that's their approach.
And using the XML schemas to validate.
And they're using, I think it's Neem that's using the JSON LD for namespace purposes, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
I don't. SIFA is not, or A4L is not into the. Into the whole.
We're not. If we were going to make JSON, if April decided to make JSON a primary level object, right, then we would have to do JSON LD or something like that because we use namespacing. We do use namespacing significantly inside our spec, right? And so, but what we're doing instead is we're creating an XML schema that has the namespacing in it. Then we convert it into a JSON instance, right? And then that instance is then has rules for marking it up. And to tell you the truth, I haven't been paying too much attention to that, to what the actual markup is, right? And how they do that. But Mike or John can probably speak to that next week if I can get them to come. And then,
okay.
And then that instance of JSON is then translated back into, XML that can be then, or in some cases, by the way, people aren't even bothering with that. They're just translating it into data and then writing SQL statements into their data structures, right? I mean, sometimes it's not even that level of complexity, right? It's just a dump of data, essentially. So it depends on the use case. But Mike and John can talk about that a lot more intelligently than I can.
Okay, that would be great. Any other comments on those two approaches? Just that we've got all kinds of approaches here, and we're not seeing any consolidation of approach. Neem's going one way, A4L's going another, Open HR's going another. So, you know, we don't have any model to follow that seems to be a consensus on approach. So I'm going to propose one more thing to talk about, and this will bring Sam and James into the conversation a little more. One of the things that we know is that in the JAXP solution, we could probably determine the rules that are being used by the software, and we could identify those translation rules and go from XML to JSON by specifying those rules, and therefore our reference implementation would be consistent with what is being done in JAXP between translating JSON and XML back and forth. Is that something that's feasible to be able to determine what those rules are, what those tools are doing?
Yeah. I mean, the JAXP standard, I think, is pretty well documented. So, yeah, I mean, I think we could do that.
You said there was another tool.
Also.
Sam, you said there was another tool that you used, right, that actually does some of the syntactic manipulation.
Are you talking about
from the object model? It takes a Java object and translate. What'd you say?
Are you talking about Moxie, or are you talking about
Moxie? I guess is it Moxie? Yeah.
So Moxie is an EclipseLink project that is able to marshal to XML or JSON using the same JAXP objects. And then XJC is a Java tool, comes with the JDK, that is able to read an XSD schema and generate JAXP objects. So I'm not sure which one you were referring to.
No, I'm referring to the first one, the Moxie. The second one is, what is it? It's
XJC.
XJP. And that actually takes the schema and creates the objects, okay, the Java objects.
So it's X is in xylophone, J is in John, and then C is in cat. XJC.
And it actually creates the annotation for the Java objects and all that, right?
Yeah. And so at Parchment, what we do is whenever PESC has a schema that we want to use, we run XJC against it, and it generates our objects. So it significantly lowers our development time for having objects that we can use in our application to talk to the PESC standards.
Yeah, we already saw the value of that when we looked at the translation that the open source XSLT we got that translated some text or some XML to JSON. We saw the slight differences, and those differences were driven by having knowledge of the schema.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of doing a raw translation, you're doing a translation based upon information that was derived from the schema.
Right.
So if we took Moxie, we took these objects that we created from the schema, and we marshaled both XML and JSON and compared them, then we should be able to extract a set of rules? Or do you think there's documentation in Moxie that tells you what? Well, there's no translation going on because you're starting from an object.
Yeah, just to be clear, it's the object is the intermediate. So you always go through the object.
Right.
It's never going directly from XML to JSON. It's going from XML to object to JSON or JSON to object to XML.
And that was the question I was asking, is could we derive, and maybe it would be through an empirical process, induction, of comparing the JSON produced and from objects against the XML produced and to derive rules that we could publish as standards for that. I'm just asking if that's something that's feasible, or would we have to have too big a sample
to
do that?
It sounds possible. I don't know that I don't know for sure. I know that the Moxie and the JAXP are open source projects, so we should be able to look at the rules that it uses. So when it sees, you know, an XML element annotation, how it translates that between XML or JSON. So I would think that you'd be able to look at the code, the open source code, to see what it's doing, how it's treating the different elements, and how it translates those to the, you know, XML or JSON.
And so it annotates a when we use XJP, is one of the annotations that it derived from an attribute? That it's an attribute?
Yeah, so JaxB is just a standard for annotating your Java objects with metadata that can then later be used to translate your object to XML. And so if something's an attribute, if something's an element, whatever it is. So all XJC does is creates the Java object with the appropriate annotation.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, if something's an element, then it'll use the element attribute or annotation. If it's an attribute, it'll use the attribute annotation, et cetera, et cetera.
And I think you said, Sam, before that could be something that's configurable, how you annotate or how you end up with something in JSON or an attribute, special encoding.
Well, let me make sure I understand your question. So XJC is configurable. So there's different ways of creating your JaxB objects that are valid, but like there's some nuanced type choices, and that's all configurable. Is that your question?
Yeah, it's configurable, but the question is, would it be possible for you to change how an attribute looks in JSON?
Oh, I see. So that would be a Moxie thing, and I think that is configurable. So just to be clear, XJC is like a build tool. So it's like a run at once. Moxie is a runtime, the marshalling tool. So Moxie I would just say Moxie. So you can use, you don't have to use Moxie. You can just use straight JaxB. But Moxie will do XML or JSON.
Okay.
James, I think you've done this. Moxie is configurable. Sure. So if you want to use cat spine, there's some other things you can do with it.
That's right. Yeah, you just tell it how you want it to handle XML attributes and whether or not, for example, you want to prefix an attribute with, say an ampersand sign or something like that.
So there's not a fixed set of rules how you do those things. Those are configurable.
Correct.
I mean, your attribute can appear differently in JSON depending on what you...
Right. Right. Of course, there's a default, there's default values. But there has to be some agreement. And I think that's, if we were going to take that approach, I like that approach. Then we just have to define what the attributes look like and convey that to anybody that wants to use the PESC standards.
Okay, what does everybody think about that approach? I mean, is that something we could spend time on going forward, or you want to just keep reviewing the different solutions out there? Could we come up with a set of rules? I think, and reading the article from A4L is helpful, and when they talked about the problems they had with a set of rules of translating from XML to JSON, they go through the reason why they added all these new features to the JSON and added some new what they would consider keywords. I mean, they're not keywords in anything, or they say these are words. They have a particular semantics that you understand from the JSON. So we can get some value from that, but I think the simplest approach just would be to come up with some translation rules and say this is ours, and if they happen to be the defaults for JaxB and Moxie, then that's fine, and that would work out fine because then somebody wouldn't have to configure those things.
Yeah, I mean, my two cents is that I think that's a good approach. I mean, it's a very, I think it's a pragmatic approach, and, you know, I think it'll work. So I would say, yeah, I think we should move forward with that.
Okay. So that we can start setting our agenda to go through that. We have a set of rules we looked at, and we might, I don't know if you guys can run, I mean, if we use examples from our own schemas, and I know you've implemented a lot of those in Jack's B, Sam, or I don't know who, Sam and James both, right? You both have dealt with this.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, we've both done
Sam,
it quite.
Yeah. So so you guys, if we have a question about, well, how does this get translated? We could take one of our schemas and an instance document, run it through and see how it turned out on both, you know, comparing the two results from the object.
True.
And that way we could get a set of rules and then an easy, say, if you want to follow us, you just, here's our reference implementation for our schemas, and you're all set. And then we can worry about JSON schemas in the future.
Yeah, I think it makes sense, especially since, you know, I mean, I don't think there's any consensus. There's a lot of different ideas out there and different groups doing different things. So, I mean, I think it makes sense to move forward with sort of this practical way to get the translation done.
But it would be, I think it's important that it's based on XML schemas. That schema metadata is used in the translation. Just taking an XSLT and taking one instance and producing another doesn't make sense, and it creates a real problem when you have a repeating element in XML.
True.
If you only have one, then it's not going to show up properly. It's going to show up as a singleton, and then it'll be hard for people to parse.
Right.
So I'll set that for part of the agenda. Alex, we'll plan on the presentation next week. If not, then we can start working on the rules next week.
Great. That sounds good.
And then, Michael, if we could probably use the collaborative tool next week, because we probably want to show stuff on the screen, the rules. We have a set of rules that appear to produce something fairly similar to what Jack's B does. So we can start from those rules and be able to show them on the screen. That might be helpful.
Yep, no problem.
And so, Michael, what you're basically doing is garnering consensus around our approach, right?
Because yeah, I'm trying to, I think it's just one approach. I think it's the fastest approach, and the insights that Sam and James have provided, really, in terms of how important the scheme is, because I think the TAB was not thinking that way. We were just thinking, okay, we got XML, we got JSON, let's just write a bunch of rules to go between one another, and that's just not sufficient. I mean, it doesn't work, and it doesn't work for programmers, and so without the schema, without that schema input, we have to have rules that reference that. How it's indicated in the schema. So I think that's a good start. Anybody else want to comment on this approach? I mean, you know, there are a lot of approaches out there, so. And Michael's still working on JSON LD and getting some insights into that. Alex, you said that that your people would probably be able to talk to that too, though, right, Jason LD?
I think so, yeah. Although, like I said, AFRL isn't using it, but I think Mike is familiar with it, and he explored that.
Yeah.
He and his team explored while we were in that conversation.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, that's what, if they've already explored it and they know, have some reasons why they didn't decide to use it, then that would be helpful too, for us to understand why they didn't go down that path, but Neem did. Interesting. Okay, I haven't heard from some of you. We can do a round robin here. And Jeff, you got any comments on what we've talked about so far?
I'm just listening and learning. I've got nothing to add.
Okay. We've talked to James. Steve?
I think this is a good approach based on other efforts we've undertaken in the past is look at most, if not all, of the avenues available to us, take a suggestion, discuss it, and go with it. And this one makes sense.
Okay. Let's see. I've got everybody that Alex already, James has been participated. So we got a tentative decision here to try and create a set of rules using both the XML instance document and the schema to translate back and forth between XML and JSON. So we'll see if we can create those rules, and we do have an implementation already working, so we know that it works, and we'll get the answer on some of those rules just by empirical testing. How does this turn out?
Yep. And, Michael, the one thing I wanted to just make a point of is this doesn't take the second sort of prioritized discussion point of producing pure JSON off the table.
Oh, not at all.
We're just going to focus on this approach first.
Yeah, because I think the discussion we had today is that it would take us quite a while. Now, one thing we can discuss, Michael, it's a good point you just brought up. What if we have a new work group? Should we have new work groups starting to develop in both JSON and XML? I mean, that would be one way of attacking that. Develop two schemas instead of one. Now, the problem with that is if they use anything from Core Main or Academic Record, then those would all have to be converted to JSON.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds horrible to me, just my opinion, right?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of extra work for a limited value. But
yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree too. It sounds like a lot of work now, but if conditions change or technology changes, I just want to make sure that if we're taking this approach, Michael, which I too agree, is that this doesn't mean we've closed the door on everything else. We're just focusing on this now.
Right. Yeah. And what could happen is if we understand the rules of translation, that will also help us understand maybe we can do automated generation of JSON schema, which I think would be our ideal situation if we didn't have to do it by hand, if we could just generate a JSON schema based upon what we know our rules are of translation. That will guide us in terms of what the rules would be for changing a XML schema into JSON. So I think that's exactly right. And you might, what might happen, Michael, is you might find some group out there that really wants to standardize JSON and they want to take it on and they have the bandwidth to do it. And we should be open to that. Okay, anybody else nobody else is in a hurricane region, right? No hurricane people out there. So I think we're good. That's all I had, unless somebody else wants to bring up some other topics. So the reading assignment for next week is to read the article from A4L so we can have a good discussion with Alex's friends when they come on. And we'll go from there. And if they can't make it, it's a bad time, then we'll go ahead and start defining our rules. Very subdued group today. Even Michael. I mean, Michael, usually it's not this subdued.
I think my schedule and the pace caught up with me today.
Yeah, that's good. You back home?
I am back home, and I am.
Okay.
I'm flying out to Erasmus Without Papers meeting.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
In Brussels, in about a week from Saturday. I sent an email out to everybody. I didn't send it out to this group, but they are live streaming in case anybody wants to watch, although, 9:30 in Brussels is 12:30 in the morning in California, so
I'm not sure everybody here. Can you summarize what Erasmus Without Papers is for everybody, to make sure that everybody knows what you're talking about there?
Sure. Erasmus Without Paper is an initiative like any other initiative, but it's headquartered in Europe. And the reason in Europe is because they have 47 countries. They're all tightly packed together. It's like the states, but the states have somewhat – the U.S. states have somewhat similar policies. You don't have to worry about data exchange as much or privacy. Sure, some states have different privacy rules, but we seem to be able to get along. The 47 countries in Europe never really wanted to get along, so they have to do extra effort to bring along certain things. So they formed Erasmus Without Paper, which was a number of countries coming together to say we have to do data exchange. It's being run out of Ghent University. They have some funding out of the European Commission, which is the federal government of Europe, the EU. But they don't have membership. They don't have sponsorship. I'm not sure what the status of their funding is from the European Commission. If it ends up drying up, I'm not sure what the status of Erasmus Without Paper is, but the initiative itself is trying to pull all the countries together and talk about and get data exchange done. Some of you might hear me talk about MREX, EMREX, which is a project of Erasmus Without Paper. So, and that's being done out of the folks at the University of Oslo, and also out of Poland. And that standard they're looking at is ELMO. And ELMO kind of maps to our transcript, kind of, sort of 80-20. But that's what they're looking to do, is map to our standards and map to our data exchange. So one is content and one is sort of the protocol transmissions. In any sense, I'm going for a variety of reasons. And I keep the EdExchange folks pretty much up to speed, and I'll just continue to socialize that, because they're also looking at JSON-LD. They have, I'm finding the more we talk, the more people from around the country, around the world, are dealing with some of the same things we are and have some of the same challenges. So it's kind of nice to hear. It makes us feel like we're not alone, that we're sort of having the right discussions. But anyway, so I'll be out there for about 4 or 5 days. I'll miss that Monday Jason call, Michael, but I'll you know, that's going to be a week from Monday.
Okay.
I'll miss that call.
Good. Well, thank you for updating on that. That's something I wasn't sure everybody knew about. Okay, that's all I have today. Anybody else? Any comments? Wake up if you're asleep.
No, that was a good meeting.
We're close on the call.
Yeah,
oh, he woke up. Jeff woke up. Good.
Yeah, I saw Alex sent an email out already, so let's really try to get some, make sure everybody can dial in next week on Monday at 1 so
yes.
that we use their time and try to get as much out of them as possible. So thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
All right.
See you guys next week?
Yep,
that's it.
All right. Bye, guys.
All righty.
You can stop the recording.
James Watson.
Leaving the meeting.
Alex, yeah.